Okay, so our agenda for today and tomorrow is to essentially finish up our discussion of Migo. And while we couldn't pretend to cover everything even within our subject, we certainly can't cover everything within the world of Migo. But what we are hoping to do is at least address to some degree the points about Migo that emerged specifically from our sugya. So the question that was raised by the Rishonim on Daf Beis and Aleph and Bav Metzia, and all the different Migo points that come out of that, so Migo that we're talking about, that Tosfos, we'll try to talk about all the issues of Migo that emerge. And we spent some time until now speaking about one specific major idea, the question of whether or not we say Migo Lahotzi. Like, should we assume that a Migo is effective even when it's up against a chazaka? That a lot of the Rishonim said that in this case, in our case in the first daf of Bav Metzia, we wouldn't say Migo, that somebody should get half a talus if he claims half a talus, because he could have claimed the whole talus. We won't say that Migo, because that amounts to a Migo Lahotzi. And we saw that other Rishonim disagreed, either because they don't think it's a situation of Migo Lahotzi, or because they don't believe that there is any such rule that we don't say Migo Lahotzi. So what we want to discuss now is a few other terutzim that are provided for this Tosfos, and to try to see what we can learn from them. And essentially not really get into Migo Lahotzi so much more, except to the extent that it's relevant to understanding these principles. So to begin with, I just want to mention, we spent some time trying to figure out what the issue is with Migo. When Migo doesn't work, let's say, for example, in the case of a Migo Lahotzi, if that's your belief that Migo doesn't work, so what's the issue? Is it an issue of strength? Migo's not strong enough to be Motzi Mena Mochzak? Or is it something else? Is it something procedural? Just Migo doesn't work that way. Migo doesn't move things around. But it's not about strength. So I wanted to just mention, Jonathan Teitelbaum raised an interesting issue this morning from the Gemara. It was on this morning's Mar Makomos, really as a way of catching us up from last week. But if you saw the Gemara on Daf Kuf Yud Amar Aleph, which again was on the Mar Makomos, which involved the case of you have a lender who lent some money and was living on property and eating the payros in payment for the money. And he had been there already 3 years. And the borrower says, that's it, it was just 3 years. And the lender said, no, it was 5 years. And he thought, the Behuda's view was that this lender should be believed because he has another time that he could use. He could say that I bought this land. I've lived here 3 years already. I lost the shtar because I'm not expected to keep the shtar that long. But I have 3 years of residence here. That means you believe me without a shtar, so I could be believed to say I bought it. So since I could have said that, so you should believe me when I say that I have 2 more years coming to me. And the next view against Rabbi Yehuda is that, no, we don't say that. Why not? Because the opposition against Rabbi Yehuda to say there's a Migo there, what's the reason? Why should you not say it's a Migo? Because the statement that he lost his shtar, which is believable when somebody buys property, they don't keep a shtar forever, is not so believable in the case when somebody is temporarily living on the land as payment for a loan. Because then, since it's an ongoing circumstance, he needs to have the proof, so he's not likely to lose the shtar. So that's why it seems to undermine the Migo. So Jonathan was asking this morning that it's interesting just to figure out what exactly is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion and what's the other opinion. Because this response seems to have a good point. That isn't that true? That Taka, you're not likely to lose the shtar if you're going to claim that it's a mashkon situation. So why does that not undermine his position? Why does Rabbi Yehuda think there is a Migo? So you could look at that various ways, but it's just interesting because here his Migo really isn't affected by that. The stronger Taina remains intact. a person who claims that he bought the property is not expected to still have the shtar. So the only weakness is in his current position. His current position that he is tiny, he wants to say that I have a borrower arrangement here, but I don't have the shtar. So the weakness is not in the strong taina, in the migo taina, it's in the actual taina. So it's an unusual issue. So it's interesting to raise the question, why should migo not be an option for this person according to that opinion? Who cares if it doesn't make so much sense in the case that he's actually claiming? But he should still have the nemanis from the stronger claim, which would not be affected at all by not having the shtar. So one could perhaps claim that machlokus in the Gemara is about that issue. Where does migo have to be strong, so to speak? If the alternate taina is strong, so then we could give it to him because the migo, because he has the power of the strong taina. Or is migo just a support overall to your credibility? And here your credibility is weakened now in your actual taina. So maybe migo is not enough to buttress that taina. You hear the point? It's just an interesting question. But here, this is an unusual case where the reason we're hesitant to say migo, according to the other opinion, is because your current claim that you are advancing has a weakness. And therefore, that leaves us to ask the question, so what? The migo is still powerful. So what do we look at? Do we look at the claim you could have used and say you have that koach hataina? Or do we say, no, migo is all about credibility, and now your credibility is weakened, so the migo is not going to be enough to save you? Yes, sir?
Wasn't the prescriber mentioned?
It was similar to the Beis Halevi that we said last week, just about what defines migo lahotzi. Do you look at the alternate taina or the current taina? So it all relates into that framework, that what is it about? It's about being able to avail yourself of a better taina, so therefore we'll give you this stronger taina. Or is it about how it affects your credibility? And in this case, maybe your credibility takes an extra hit from the actual taina you're using, and therefore maybe migo is less effective. So it's just an interesting consideration, and I thank you to Jonathan for bringing it to my attention. We'd also like to make one more point. So again, I said we're not going to get into so much anymore migo lahotzi, but that was the discussion about those who say we don't say migo lahotzi. But we did mention last week that there are Rishonim, major Rishonim, who disagree, right? Like the Ramban and a few others who say that we do hold migo lahotzi. Rivash, if you recall, it was two days in the Ramah. If you say migo against chazaka. So we focused all our attention last week on how to understand why a migo should not be able to be motzi from a chazaka. But it's interesting to pay attention for a minute to the possibility that a migo can be motzi. Because what does that say about migo? Because we know that it is quite a burden, it is quite a threshold to be motzi min hamuchzak. For example, what cannot be motzi min hamuchzak? Sorry? Well, you can't both be muksa, but a rove. Right? You know, well, maybe you can, but then that's itself. You shouldn't say you can't be both, but that's normally not the conflict. But right, rove. We know that ain't holchem umam menacher harove. So rove, despite the fact that it's an overwhelming, powerful principle, and we rely on it in many very significant areas of halacha, including dinei nefashos, but nonetheless, it can't be motzi min hamuksak. And apparently, according to a lot of significant Rishonim, migo can be motzi min hamuchzak. So it raises an interesting question about how exactly do we evaluate migo. In general, we see some of the discussions here, including in the Rishonim and elsewhere, and certainly in the Poskim, Nosekelim and the Shulchan Aruch, they'll try to figure out some of these klalim, bari v'shama, rov, muchzak, migo, they'll try to mathematically plug them into each other. But sometimes it's difficult because there are complicating issues. So, for example, are we going to say now, according to these Rishonim, that a migo is stronger than a rove? Is that what that means? That the same rove that's very powerful in other areas of halacha, this mechanism of Migo, which we're having a hard time really pinning down, that's more powerful than a rove according to those Rishonim? So is it purely a quantitative point? It's just something that's important to think about. Why would it be, let's say, if you're the Ramban, so how would you explain why rove cannot be motziv and amotzah, but Migo could theoretically be motziv and amotzah? Is it just a quantitative thing? Migo was super powerful, or is there some difference there that we could maybe point to? Anyone want to take a stab at it? Aaron?
Maybe,
okay, come back to you. Rony?
Migo is like inherent to your credibility. Rove is just some external factor.
So that's definitely, I think, a first step. You have to figure out that what you're addressing is that we have to wonder if when we talk about all these different edges, all these different points, okay, you're a Baru, you're a Rove, you're a Migo, you're a Mopsa. They're probably not all on one scale, not all quantitative. They do different things. So maybe they're accomplishing different parts and we have to pay attention to what they're accomplishing. So in terms of Migo, so what you just said is that Migo enhances your credibility. Let's focus that part of the sentence. So maybe that's what Migo does. What does Rove do? Does Rove make something true? So you often find in discussions of Rove that Rove, as powerful as it is, I'm going to try to stay away from Lamdisha terminology and just try to look at it head on, that a Rove is probably not something that tells you X is definitely true. Rove is a very strong edge that allows you to make decisions based on its existence. And you are fully within your rights in those circumstances to make your decisions based on a rove. But it's very difficult to say that a rove means something is definitely true. Almost by definition, it's hard to say that. Why?
It's based on percentages.
Because it's based on percentages and... there's a miyud also, right? By definition, if a rove exists, a miyud exists. So by definition, rove is not every single circumstance in the world. Now, there are different kinds of rove, and we're not getting into rubidisikamani, rubidisikamani, which is very complicated and off-topic, but the very word rove means that there's a meat, generally. It means that it's not always true. We're just allowed to assume it's true. So, for example, without getting into any specifics, presumably, although it's not clear, presumably, by tomorrow night, there'll be a decision as to who the President of the United States will be for the next 4 years. And that decision will be based on Roe. Right? That decision will be based on some system of majority. But no one's going to claim, or I should say no one, but the general premise is not that Roe completely defines for us who the best president is. It's clear that the premise of Rove is we have a democracy. We need to have some way to decide who it's going to be. So it makes sense we will follow the majority. But we clearly acknowledge, especially in this election, it's very close, right, the existence of another side. So when you have a muchzak, so a muchzak we see is a very high threshold. So a Rove is not an absolute fact. You can't change the status quo and upset the muchzak based on somebody else's rove, because the rove doesn't prove that the muchzak is wrong. Because the way some of the Rishonim explain, smoch miyuta lechazaka, he's not only the muchzak, but he also has a miyut, which means what's the power of a miyut? A miyut doesn't normally give you anything. But a miyut means that we know that there's a miyut, therefore rove is not 100% establishing the truth. It's only telling you how to behave. So therefore, a rove against the muchzak, there's no reason why the rove should upset the muchzak. The muchzak is a presumption of the truth. And the rove doesn't clarify that the muchzak is wrong. But perhaps in the case of the Migo, according to those Rishonim who would grant such power to a Migo, and of course we saw a lot of Rishonim didn't give that much power, but according to those Rishonim who would, so maybe, like Rami said, the miyut, they see a migo, or at least some migos, there are going to be a lot of variables, that they'll see amigo when it works to be motzi mamum as a rock-solid proof that the guy is telling the truth. Or enough of a rock-solid proof that we can credit it as such. Nothing's ever 100%, but enough. Enough that we could see it as essentially factual. While a rove, by its very nature, we can't say it's factual.
Aren't amigos also generally based on presumptions?
So we saw that there were those who said that, and those who said that it's based on presumption, and we discussed when we were talking about why those many Rishonim say that rov does not work through motzim and motzlek, it's because they see it either as premised on top of a rov or an umdana, they see things like that. But just the question, why would you say differently? Why would you ever say that it could be motzim and motzlek? You'd have to say against those views, and you'd have to say that it gives such credibility that it actually considers it factual. So the point being that, and what's just important for us to keep in mind as we go further, is that you can give somebody an edge because of a rove, because of a bingo, because of a bari, because of a chazaka, but they're all different things. And we probably can't put them all on a 1 to 10 scale and give them numbers. It probably depends on what we're doing and what's on the other side. And it's important to stop sometimes and to try to think and not just to look at it mathematically about how is it operating and why should it be that in a head-to-head conflict with a different edge, with a different talking point, you're going to pick one over the other. Okay. So now let's look again at our alternative answers. So as we saw, there were at least, let's say, 4 or 5 alternative answers besides not saying Migo Lahotzi. Today, and maybe a little bit into tomorrow, let's focus on 2 of them. They're going to intertwine. On the one hand, the idea that we can't say Migo Mimamon Lamamon, that you can't win with a Migo if it's based on the claim that attaches itself to different property. And the working premise here is that you want to win your half talus because of your claim on the other half talus. And those are 2 separate territories. That's one answer, and we'll talk about that first. But the other approach that we'll also talk about is that maybe this migo is a bad migo because it's a migo de ha'aza. That maybe there's a limit to how chutzpah somebody wants to be. And the assumption that people could just lie if they want to, it's not always true. If the alternative lie is going to require a higher degree of chutzpah, so maybe people are limited in how brazen they're willing to be. And maybe amigo de ha'aza is not always assumed to be effective. If the other claim is going to require a saying something especially chutzpahdik, it's not necessarily going to be effective. So first, let's talk about migo mimamum mimamum. So there are Rishonim who say that that's the issue here. Who are the Rishonim who we could see who say that in the context of the Talos? And the Sion, sorry? The Ran, Shrisha says, who else? The Mordechai. Mordechai is quoting Rabbeinu Tam, right? The Mordechai quotes Rabbeinu Tam is probably the one you come across first. The Ran says it as well. Who else? Rabbeinu Yonah, yes, we'll come to him separately. And Nemuki Yosef says it in our Gemara, right? The Nemuki Yosef, the Ran, and the Mordechai quotes Rabbeinu Tam, they all say that this is the approach here, that don't say you should score points because you could have claimed the whole talus. The whole talus is off the other half of the table, the other half of the talus is off the table. It's essentially a different property. You can't come with your claim from a different property and try to win on this property. I'll tell you a fascinating thing. So somebody who's not quoted among the list of Rishonim who normally takes this side, but I did put it on the Marmakomos if you saw it. So what about Rashi? So the Netziv in his commentary to Shas, the Merom Esadeh, so the Netziv notes that Rashi probably belongs in this camp as well. Because what does Rashi say? If you look at the Rashi and the Mishnah, v'zeh omer chetzi shali. So the person who claims the talis is half his, who ends up with a quarter. So Rashi comments, modehu Shehachetzi shel chaveiro. He admits that the other half belongs to his friend. Ve'ein donin ela al chetzia. And we are only having a din Torah on the other half. So it doesn't seem to be such a significant rashi. Seems like he's just telling you the simple pshat in the Mishnah. But the Netziv has an eye for precision. The Netziv says, look at Rashi. Why does Rashi say this? It says, because Rashi is answering Tosfos' question. Because Tosfos, who says, why doesn't this guy claim, have the possibility of claiming the whole talus is him, is his, and therefore win based on amigo? Answers Rashi, according to the Netziv, because ain't done in el al chetzia. In other words, what is Rashi telling us, according to the Netziv? Migo me mamon la mamon. So it's a fascinating comment. It's definitely worth a look. You can get the Merome Sade on HebrewBooks.org as well. But he essentially makes a couple of points in a short paragraph. He also has a cryptic style, and he's able to be medayik things in the Rishonim where it's not so explicit. But so he believes that Rashi is counted among those who say the answer is mamo la mamo, that Rashi is anticipating Tosfos' question with this comment. And he essentially then goes on to say that Rashi is l'shitaso in two ways. That Rashi can't give Tosfos' answer because of a double-barreled attack on Tosfos' answer. What was Tosfos' answer? Migo lahotzi lo amrina. And so we said that there are at least two reasons why you might disagree with that. And according to the Netziv, Rashi holds both of those reasons. One reason is you might not agree that Migo lahotzi lo amrina. So he brings proof from other Masechtas that Rashi does not agree to that principle, that Rashi could believe Migo lahotzi. But we mentioned the second reason, and this is just a good, as we kind of segue soon into Chazara, this will bring us back to the first day of Shir. So we mentioned the other reason not to say Migo Lahotzi as an answer is, why are we assuming you're being Motzim and a Muchzak? You're saying each person who's holding half a talus is a Muchzak? We saw that was a questionable assumption. We might not say that way. So the Netziv claims that Rashi doesn't think that's the case. Why? It's really a fascinating diuk. You remember, again, day one, this gets back at our Chazara, the question of when do you say Yachloku and when do you not say Yachloku? So Tosfos and many other Rishonim say, you say Yachloku if Ochsin, if each party is holding on to something. But there was the Ritzva and the other Balei HaTosfos like that who say you don't need to have Ochsin. You could have Yachloku even if you don't have both parties holding on to it. Right? Remember? So once again, Rashi is not normally brought into that conversation. But the Netziv thinks that Rashi holds the second view. Because the first Rashi in the Masechta, Shnayim Ochsin Betalis, so says Rashi, Davka Ochsin. So first it sounds like he's agreeing with Tosfos, with Rabbeinu Tam's Tosfos, right? That it has to be Ochsin. But then the rest of Rashi goes on to say, why does he care about Ochsin? Dishnehem Muchzokin ba, Ve'ein lazeh koach ba yosem mizeh. Sheilu haisa biyad echa levado have ida chamotzei mechavero v'olav lahavi raya be'edim shehi shalo ve'eino neman zeli tol b'shvur. So the Netziv says really a fascinating diuk that Rashi's interest is not really in the ochsin. Rashi's interest is in that they are both ochsin, and therefore they're both equal. As opposed to where there's no ochsin. But as opposed to a situation where one is Ochsin and the other is not, then we'd be in trouble. Then you can't say Achloku if you have one guy holding on to it and the other guy isn't holding on to it. But if neither was holding on to it, then you could theoretically have Achloku as well. In other words, like the Ritzva, like that opinion that a number of the Balei HaTosfos that have ratios at the beginning of their names, the Rivam, the Ritzva, others, that came out to say that you don't need Ochsin for Yachloku. He thinks Rashi is in their camp. So therefore, says in the Tzid, Rashi's not going to say that this doesn't work because of Migo Lahotzi, because the Yachloku scenarios in the Mishnah are not premised on anyone holding it. So if they're not holding it, for sure you wouldn't call that an Ochsin.
So therefore, essentially, he understands Rashi to be saying that our case in the Mishnah is not a case where the other party is mukhsak, because according to Rashi, you wouldn't even have to be holding it. Ellie?
Maybe that's why Rashi starts by saying that he's Modeh, because once he is Modeh, then the other party is mukhsak on that hand.
That makes him mukhsak.
Yeah.
But even if so, were it not the case, what would the case be without any Hoda? Right, what's the alternative claim? The alternative claim, nobody's mukhsak.
But it seems like Rashi starts.
It's a later Rashi, the first Rashi, when he's describing the scenario in the Mishnah. The way that it reads it is a tremendous deal. Again, this is not something that struck any of us when we saw this Rashi, but that the case of the Mishnah is not really premised on Mokzim. It's just premised on one party not having more than the other party. So it could have been, even if they weren't Oksim, like the Ritzbah, and therefore, if they're not holding it, and we're still saying Yachloku, you can't tell me that it's an issue of being Motzim and Amoksah, because they're not even holding it. If they're holding it, we can figure out if that's called Motzah. But if they're not even holding it, so then we're not going to come on to Motzah. So therefore, Rashi can't say that the issue is it's Migo Lohotzah. Make sense? Right, but Oksin, yeah, we see that there were Rishonim, we already knew there were Rishonim who say that it's Lav Dafka Oksin.
But our mission specifically tied in Nachasim for a certain reason. I mean, even according to
these. But it's still the Yachloku case. Apparently, the case of the din would still be true if they weren't Oksin, like the Rambam's Arima case. If they were standing there next to a pile, it would have the same din. Apparently, the Rambam quotes all that together.
I guess the Chiddush, according to the Nitziv and according to others who say that, is that, maybe if that since the Oksin is in it, so then, even in a case where. What's
the Chiddush from the Nitziv? So the Nitziv's point is that Rashi, these are all views that other Rishonim hold. His Chiddush is to see it all in Rashi, in very few words in Rashi, which is particularly fascinating. But that essentially Rashi holds, the answer to our question is, we don't say Migol and Mamma Mamma. And he has to say that as opposed to Tosfos' answer of Migol Lahotzi for two reasons. First of all, he doesn't necessarily agree that we don't say Migol Lahotzi. But he doesn't agree either that this case is premised on Migol Lahotzi, because the same din would apply if the two parties were not holding it. So if you say Yachloku without them holding it, so then for sure it's not a Chazaka case.
So we saw already that Rishonim weren't sure to call this Motzim and Mitzvah. So he says Rashi for sure is not going to say it, because he is not premised on the expectation that they're even holding it in the first place. That's essentially the point. David?
Can you repeat how the Nitziv gets from Rashi,
like, because the emphasis from the part afterwards, it says that ve'ein lazeh koach ba yosur mizeh she'ilu haisa b'yad echa levado havi'ida chamotzi mechavero v'alav l'havirai,
that the emphasis is not so much on the fact that they're holding it, but that not only one is holding it and the other isn't. It's a tremendous deal.
So, like, similarly, that if they're holding it, they have the same power. So, if it was just on the ground, and they next to it, they also have the same power.
Right. Which again is a view we know that Rishonim maintain, and he's telling us as a chiddush that that is Rashi. So you could certainly disagree, but it is quite a perspective. I think it was Aaron and John.
I mean, part of the it seems to me that what he's coming on is that I remember that the Pnei Yeshua asked Rashi at the end, it seems to be like Pshita, like it's in the hand of one of them, then
what's why do you need it? Why do you need the whole story?
It seems to me that some of the Achrim, the Tziv, and Rav Scheinberg also, they must become teach you this Chiddush.
It's another one, I guess we just stopped there. If you only wanted to say that it's about Olsen, you could have just stopped.
Right.
I mean, that is true. You know, the Tziv himself is very terse. If you read the Tziv, it's very terse. But essentially, your point is well taken, that first of all, it seems a little bit extraneous. But also, it takes you off the course. If you just said Dafka, so then we could say, all right, the emphasis is that there is an Achiza going on. Then if he's going to add some words, then let him explain, oh, because since they're Oksin, so that gives them all a claim, or that gives them all a Chazaka, or something like that. He goes on to say something else. He goes on to say, yeah, because if only one was Oksin, then we'd have a problem, Oksin Yichavera Olaharaya. So it does kind of support that it's his reading, that his interest is not so much that there is an Oksin going on, but that the Oksin makes them equal. Jonathan?
We have to assume that if, let's say, Rashi, that Tosos does not have to necessarily address Rashi, that's maybe Mechalek on him right there?
Oh, Tosfos for sure is not necessarily addressing Rashi, because I don't know if Tosfos perceived Rashi the same way as
that's
Nitziv
saying,
did.
So
right, but he's saying that Rashi is he's putting a lot of Rashi was clearly writing way before Tosfos.
Right.
But we're saying that he's not interested so much in Tosfos, he's interested in Rashi. So Rashi is asking Tosfos' question without asking it. Right? This is classic Rashi with his very, very measured words. So Rashi doesn't have to ask the question of Migo because he's explained that this extra half of the talus is not a part of the claim, i.e. mamon l'mamon.
Right.
And then he's saying, well, why does Rashi have to even consider mamon l'mamon as opposed to Migo l'hotzi? Two reasons. He doesn't agree that we don't say Migo l'hotzi, and he wouldn't read this Mishnah as a case of Migo l'hotzi.
Right, but if Tosos is just saying that you would read it as Migo l'hotzi, Migo l'hotzi don't read it, so Tosos Torah is a little bit machalic on that.
Oh,
the Rashi
yeah, for sure. Right, Tosos
wouldn't address that, say, like, kashali.
Yeah, because again, I said we had such a chiddush to even see the Rashi saying right. it. You know, I don't think I have to ask for Tosos. I hear what you're saying, that if it was Beferish, you'd expect Tosos usually
right.
to identify when he's arguing on Rashi. But I don't think it has to bother us that he's not spelling it out here. Okay, is there another question over here? Good. Okay, so Jonathan mentioned before, there's another Rishon who seems to be in this camp, and that is Rabbeinu Yonah. But very significantly, Rabbeinu Yonah is in a different sugya, and that may end up being relevant, may end up being important. That Rabbeinu Yonah is commenting on a Gemara in Bava Basra, along with Beis and Beis, along with Gimel and Aleph, where the Gemara tells us that Rabba Bar Sharshan was in a somewhat scandalous situation, meaning that people were gossiping about him. That's how the Gemara puts it, that there was a rumor that went out around him, that he was essentially stealing from his own, that he was taking the peros of orphans' lands. Really not the great kind of rumor to go around about him. He doesn't put it in a positive light. So he was asked to clarify, what's the story? Is he really doing that? So he explained, no, he's not stealing anything from orphans. But essentially the situation was that he had a deal, he had an arrangement from the father, before there was an orphan, from the father's original ownership. So there was a loan to that father. And the shtar entitled him to eat the payrolls for a certain amount of time. Then the thing was, he had another loan, which he didn't have a shtar for. So he wanted to keep on going in order to take payment for the other one. And he wouldn't be believed without a shtar to collect from these yisomim. He'd have to take a shulam. So he figured better he should do it this way because he'll have a migo. Because since he's already there for 3 years, so he could have had a claim that he bought the land from the father. And therefore, his feeling was he should be believed that he could continue collecting his debt because Migo, he could have just claimed it was bought. Now, what happens to me, the Gemara says there's a weakness in that Migo because if it was really bought from the Yisomim, bought away from the Yisomim, it would have been known. But aside from the way the Gemara deals with it, so Rabbeinu Yonah, the Aliyah to Rabbeinu Yonah, if you haven't had a chance to see, I think there were copies around. So the Rabbeinu Yonah discusses all the various weaknesses of this Migo. And among them is the issue that it is a Migo Mimamon L'mamon. Because essentially what's going on? He wants to keep eating these payros. And how does he want to do that? With a claim that he bought the land. The land is something else. And that would entitle him to the payros as well, but it's a claim essentially on different arenas. And therefore, there is a chisaron of migo mimamon l'mamon. So it emerges from this Rabbeinu Yonah that there is such a concern. And we'll have to see a little bit how that reflects on our Gemara over here. Aaron?
Wait. That is, believe me, that I have the other chov because...
Right.
Wherever you said, believe me, I'm the peros.
Yeah, I'm entitled to peros because of the chov.
Isn't there two?
Yes, but believe me that I'm entitled because of the second chov to continue reading the peros.
The first.
Right. Okay. Because I could alternatively claim that I bought the whole land. So that's on something else. The alternative claim is on the whole land. And through that, he wants to get the peros. So we'll have to discuss whether or not it really matches up, but it sounds like another Rishon invoking this idea that Nigo Mimamon Mamon is not affected. So before considering that question in further detail, so let's try to understand a little bit. Yes, sir.
Isn't it just that he can't say over there that Migu because there's a call that he's...
The Gemara says that, right?
So without that, wouldn't he have been able to say that Migu?
So that's what the Rabbeinu Yonah discusses. He discusses all the potential issues with it in the context of discussing it. It talks also about Migu Lohotzi, whether or not it would be Migu Lohotzi. Goes to a couple of issues. And in that context, he also pins the problem of Migu Mimam Mimam. But the Gemara itself ends up saying, like you said, that the
Migu... It sounds like a Migu Mimam Mimam, right?
Right. That's the Rabbeinu Yonah issue. But the Gemara ultimately says that it's a problem anyway because of the call.
Hi. There's also a problem with enacting your own ego outside of Beis Din. Isn't it up to, like, don't you have to bring the weaker claim in front of Beis Din and have that be the opportunity? But if you've already acted on the weaker claim, are you kind of standing behind that to a greater degree?
Yeah, except that essentially what he's basically saying is that he's entitled to these papers, so he's taking them. But once he's called on it, so he has to defend himself in Beis Din. So now, okay, you're asking what the story is. This is the way the claim goes, and I have amigo that I could have said something not true that would have been believed. So you're right that if he was tofe something or something like that, which you have to figure out how to view this, whether this is comparable to Tisa, but essentially it was a continuation of the existing arrangement. So this was the deal that he had with the father, so he certainly felt morally entitled to continue it. But just once questions were raised, so then you have a din Torah in place or a potential din Torah in place, and now he has to explain that this is the scenario, that I have a migo. But you're right, that normally if we have a case between two people, so I'm not going to just make a vigilante justice for myself and say that the migo makes me win, but this is, in this case, he had the existing arrangement to allow him to continue, and then he's going to defend it once he's challenged based on the migo. So let's try to figure out for a second. There are a couple of things more we have to see about how these things match up. But let's try to figure out, similar to what we asked in terms of Migo Lahotzi, you know, why should it be that Migo wouldn't work to be Motzi Mamon, according to those who say like that. So now, according to those who say, Migo, Mimamon, Lamamon, Lo Amrina, and they should point out that not everyone agrees with that principle either, and indeed, La Halacha, maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more, but if you look, I put this on the Maamar Makomos, the Vilna Gaon, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, concludes that we do say, Migo Mimamo Mamamo, and the Shach also concludes that ultimately, that we do say, Migo Mimamo Mamamo, as does the Aruch HaShulchan, who we'll talk about in a few minutes. So it's not clear that this actually makes it to practical Halacha. But according to those Rishonim who say that we can't say Migo Mimamon Lamamon, why not? What's the issue? Doesn't seem like it's the exact same kind of circumstance as Migo Lahotzi, where it was a question of weakness, let's say. So what's the issue? What's the problem in Migo Mimamon Lamamon? Anyone want to take a stab at it? Well, one suggestion you find in some of the Rishonim, in the Ran and the Muki Yosef, they claim that the issue is, essentially, we're going to merge two answers here, according to them. Because what's the issue according to them? Ha'aza. Right? The other answer that we haven't gotten to yet, that this Migo is bad because maybe you don't want to be so brazen as to say the better claim. So that's how they essentially understand Migo Mimamon Lamamon. That to bring in some other object that's not in the discussion right now, that requires a certain brazenness. And we're not going to assume that the person involved finds that so easy to do. Our whole assumption that he could easily lie, and you could easily lie maybe when you're talking about the existing thing you're fighting over. But to go bring in something else and say, well, believe me, because I could talk about that item, that requires a certain brazenness, and maybe that's not open to you. Maybe you don't have access to that kind of brazenness. So that position is interesting for a couple of reasons, but essentially merges these two answers that we plan to talk about. The Migo the Mamun Mamun Migo the Haza, so essentially says the Ran and the Muki Yosef that that's what Migo the Mamun Mamun is. It's a type of Migo the Haza. It requires a brazenness that we're not sure is necessarily present, and therefore we're not going to credit you with. Some of the Afronim say differently. And you could say, for example, if we understand Migo, in general, on our first day of Migo, so we said the two broad questions of whether Migo is essentially credibility or is it koach hatayin, that you have access to all of the claims that are in front of you, and even if you're not using the stronger claim, you have that power because of the koach hatayin. So some say, like Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, the Kovet Shiurim, that you only have the koach hatayin that's present within this case. You don't have all the koach hatayin of your life. Shouldn't make sense that because you could win on some other case, that should make you have that ability in this case. It's only within this case that if you had access to a stronger claim, so fine, we'll let you have that power here, even without the claim. But to take the power from a claim in a different case doesn't make sense if that's how we understand it. While if it was about credibility, maybe it would make sense. If I have a better way to accomplish my goal, and I'm not taking it, that makes me honest. But if we're focusing on the koach hatayna and the power that's granted to you within this situation, we should probably limit it to those that exist within this case. Jonathan?
Even if we say it's ne'amanis, can you still say it's a problem? Because when you're dealing within one item, not mamon la mamon, so if you make you could have made a strong claim, so you could have gotten more of the item, let's say.
Right.
So you didn't. But if it's two things, it could be that the person really just doesn't care about the second, the other item anymore. So therefore, he's willing to make a bigger loss. He's willing to skip out on a stronger claim on the other item just to make a weak claim on this item. But it could be he doesn't care about the other item anymore.
But if that other claim would get him this item,
right?
So then why shouldn't he do it? If his whole goal is to get this item by hook or by crook, even if he has to lie, so if that lie would be available to him, why wouldn't he take it?
Saying he could be lying about the other item. That would be
right.
Mamun.
That's the issue. But the question of why is Mamun Mamun a problem?
Right.
So if it's about credibility, it's harder to see why it's a problem. Except the Rishonim's explanation that no, the credibility is because it takes too much chutzpah. But this second explanation, Bukhan's explanation, is that credibility is not any different. But this Migo is premised on the power you have to win this case, which is still given to you even though you're not invoking that claim, but only for this case, not from a different case to bring it into you. There is a third approach which also brings in another model. Rav Shimon Shkap, again, Rabbi Yonah Yeshiva. So Rav Shimon Shkap in his Chidushim to Bava Metzia, he essentially says that the issue is, what does Migo accomplish? Migo essentially is a machzik. And this is something that we saw in the context of Migo Lahotzi. That one of our possibilities was that Migo is not limited in power, it's just limited in terms of process, what it does. So what Migo does is it gives you solidity in what you are claiming. You have a claim on an item, now you are made into a muchzak because of your, or into a machzik, some form of a muchzak, because of your migo. So therefore, the very premise of migo is going to be that it's relevant to this item. If it gives you a chazak in some other item, that's not going to help you in this case. But essentially, migo means I'm fighting over this tape recorder, so the fact that I have a migo gives me a chazak on the tape recorder. So if I have a migo that comes from the chair, so then, okay, I'll give me a chazak on the chair, but it's not going to give me any extra standing when it comes to what I'm talking about. So this essentially is an outgrowth of the Migo Lahotzi issue. That Migo Lahotzi doesn't work maybe because Migo simply doesn't take things away from people, it just solidifies their hold on something. So by the same token, It only solidifies your hold on the item that the migu is about. And it doesn't help if it's coming from some other area. So essentially, we just saw three approaches. The first one compares it to migo da'aza, or joins it with migo da'aza. The second one focuses on migo as a koach hataina rather than a nemonis issue. And the third one joins up with the whole migo lahotzi issue and says that maybe just like migo lahotzi doesn't work because migo only solidifies your chazaka on something, so too it's only going to do that if it's relevant to that thing as opposed to something else. Now there is an interesting hybrid in the Aruch HaShulchan. I'm not 100% sure how to explain it, but you can take a look. The Aruch HaShulchan is in Siman Kuf Lamed Ches, Sif Gimel, and Choshen Mishpat. And in general, Aruch HaShulchan is always a very, very useful, beautifully organized work where he beautifully summarizes all the Rishonim and goes through everything. So if you look in that one sif, it's very useful chazar in general. So if you look in Kuf Lamed Ches Gimel, so he talks about Yachloku. And then he just says in a very succinct, organized way, so why should we not say in the case where it's three quarters and one quarter, why don't we say Migo? So he goes in straight fashion through all the answers in the Rishonim. And well, you could say it's Migo Lahotzi, and you could say it's Migo Momomom, and you could say Migo Da'az. He goes through everything in an organized fashion. And in that context, he raises the mamon lamamon position. And he says kind of a hybrid, which is interesting just to take note of. So he says, even though I hold in Siman Pei Bei, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that you can say migo mi mamon lamamon. But, he says, you can only say it if you already have some kind of chazaka on the two mamonos, on the two items that you're dealing with, so then you can say migo from one to the other. But if you don't have any type of a chazaka, so then you can't say migo mimamun lamamun. And he says that's true even according to those who say migo works lahotzi. But in other words, migo is effective to be motzi mamon, but not when it's mimamun lamamun in things we don't have a chazaka. Which seems to draw upon various aspects of these svaras. You could probably mix and match in a couple of ways to get to that point. But it's a very interesting point. I encourage you to take a look at the Aruch HaShulchan in general, but specifically this comment, how it addresses all of the various topics that we're talking about. Okay, so let's talk for a moment about Baba Basra, about the case of Rama Bar Sharsha. So is it really a perfect model for our case? Are we safe in assuming that Rabbeinu Yonah would agree with the Mordechai's Rabbeinu Tam, with the Nimuki Yosef? Are the cases comparable? The case of Rabba Bar Sharshim, who wanted to get the Peros through claiming he owns the land, and the case of this person in the Mishnah, who wants to get a half a talus by claiming he owns the whole talus. So Aaron's shaking his head. He does not think that they're comparable. Do you want to explain why?
Because one of them, the two things are two completely different mamonos. Mm-hmm. That they're not even one's not connected to the other. Although you can abstractly separate the talus between one and the other, especially this Kodesh Rashi where he says that mm-hmm. the mode that separates like two different halves. But at the same time, it's at least according to a lot of Rishonim, you saw once you're toe facing it, then it's considered like your muchsak, your toe facing the whole thing. So it seems from that perspective at least that it's one item.
So it seems essentially that your claim here, it's not completely foreign. You're including what you're actually looking to get. So instead of just saying the half talus that you end up getting, you're saying the whole talus, which includes the half talus. So to say it's completely outside a whole different case seems not to really match up 100% with the Baba Basra case, Ellie.
Also, when you claim the whole talus, what you end up, if you know the basic mission, you know that you're going to end up getting half the talus.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's so inherent to the claim of the whole, getting half the talus is so inherent to the claim of claiming the whole talus.
I think it's tied in a way that's not comparable to the case of, because the psak is going to end up the exact idea that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So it's not comparable to the case of Rabbi Bar Sharsha. It could be. It does seem like there are these differences. It does seem like it's not a perfect match. And there are those who say like that. For example, there's a nice edition of the Mordechai that has Ha'aris in the bottom. So the Ha'aris in the bottom of the Mordechai, they notice, they think that there is a major difference, a major chiddush that this Mordechai is saying from Rabbeinu Tam that's on top of Rabbeinu Yonah. And he kind of leaves that as an observation, that it's not exactly comparable, it's a big chiddush. And there is discussion about this in the Birkas of Ram. It's a contemporary sefer which you can also access at HebrewBooks.org. So the Birkas of Ram on Bava Kamma talks about this also. He says it seems that really the Mordechai, Rabbeinu Tam and the Mordechai, is a big chiddush, is not really the same thing as Rabbeinu Yonah. So he has an approach there which you can take a look at. I'm not 100% sure if I'm understanding it correctly, but the way I'm understanding it is interesting, so I'm going to stay that way, and you can take a look and see if you think he's saying something else. But based on what he's saying, you can make the following observation. What does Migo mean? Migo means that because I would be believed in a different claim, I should be believed in this claim. Right? That's normally what Migo means. That's not what happens, really, in the case of the Mishnah. In the case of this Mishnah, what potential way does this guy have of ending up with half the talus? What could he do? He could claim he owns the whole talus. Right, what really happened? So what really happened is he thinks he picked it up the same time as the other guy. But he could be believed on that by saying he owns the whole talus. So what would happen if he would say he owns the whole talus? He has ne'amanus then? No. He just ends up with the whole talus. Not because he's believed on his claim. That's an interesting point to think about. Because if he claims the whole talus, and the other guy claims the whole talus, and they have equal claim to the whole talus, so they're going to have to each end up midin yachloku with half a talus. So that's not nemanus. That's the resolution of the conflict of two people claiming the same thing. So that's an interesting observation to make. Now, he applies it however he applies it, because I've run, but if you think about it for our purposes, that you could say that Migo is all about getting the amonis from a stronger taina. But in this case, the other plan may get him what he wants, but it's not the amonis. It's a resolution that will end up with him getting what he's looking for here. But Migo was premised on the fact that he could have said something else and been believed, and maybe it's not effective in a situation where you could get what you want through a plan, but it's not going to give you any credibility. I think that's also an interesting thing to think about in terms of our Mishnah, that perhaps that's the idea here as well, that the Migo is ineffective because the other Migo is not going to give you ne'amanus. In the Birkas of Ram, he says something similar, and he uses it basically to say that he thinks that really Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Yonah are closer than you think, that essentially it's not one more inclusive claim that will get him the half talus. It's a whole different mahalach, it's a whole different type of zechiah, and therefore really is Miko Mimon Lamamon, just like Rabbeinu Yonah and Yonah Basra, they really do line up, and it's not as different as you might think otherwise. Hi, Aaron.
Remember
the Birkas of Ram is in Bava Kamma? Yeah, it's on Daf Gimel in Bava Kamma. He lists the topics that he talks about at length. This is essentially the first. The way the Birkas of Ram is organized, he has smaller artists and he has longer pieces mixed in. This is the first titled piece in Bava Kamma. I'm sorry, did I say Bava Kamma? I'm going to say Bava Mitzi. In Bava Mitzi, in our Mesechta. We're learning Bava Mitzi, right? So that's an interesting point to discuss. Now, the Rishonim, if you had a chance to see, maybe we'll have to start this point and we'll continue it tomorrow. We'll leave it on a little bit of a cliffhanger. The Rishonim, such as the Mordechai and a few others, you find this expression in a number of Rishonim. The Rishonim who say that Migo Mimamon Lamamon doesn't work in a monetary conflict, They have a kasha on themselves. What's the kasha? Anyone see it? That it does seem to work in the Gemara later, or at least be considered in the context of a shvua. That the Gemara discusses that a shvua, in the case of Yachloku, or in the case of especially the three quarters Yachloku, is really just an external takanas chachamim that we put there so people won't come up with some plan to steal somebody else's stuff. But the Gemara considers that really this person should have been pater from the shvua because he could have claimed that he deserved the whole thing. It's the Gemara in Daf Ches. It was on the Amar Makomos if you had a chance to see it. So apparently, Migo Mimamon Mimamon is good enough to get you out of a shvua. Right, to be sure to ask this question, right? So it's not good enough, you're telling me, for a monetary conflict, but it is good enough to get you out of the shul. So say these Rishon Ramiya, you know, Migo Lavon Lamamon is not a strong enough birur in the case of a monetary conflict, but it is enough to get us out of the shul. Shul is not such a big deal. Some point out that shul is a Tekadis Mechamek, okay, whatever it is, but they say apparently there's a lower threshold to get us out of a shvua than there is in monetary issues, so the migo is not effective for its monetary purpose, but it is effective to get us out of a shvua. Why is that a little bit surprising? Sorry? Well, shvua is more chamer, how do you see that it's more chamer? Okay, but there's a proof you can bring from our topic, our imminent topic. So as we mentioned, we're going to intertwine this with the issue of Miko de Ha'aza. And so we see that there are some Rishonim who say that Miko de Ha'aza is the issue here. That Miko de Ha'aza is not effective. So apparently other Rishonim say Miko de Ha'aza is effective. And we'll get more into that tomorrow. The last section of the Maamar Komos, which I don't think anyone got up to, a number of Rishonim go back and forth on the effectiveness of Migo de Ha'aza. But there's one thing that we know from the Gemara explicitly, our Gemara on Dav Gimel, that Migo de Ha'aza is not effective for. What is it not effective for? To get you out of a shvua. Because the Gemara asks, why is it that a Moda B'Mitzvah has to take a shvua? And that normally, if a person is kofer bakalah, you owe me money, and you say, no, I don't owe you anything. So you're off the hook, because I don't have any proof from Otsi Mechaber or Verat. But, if you tell me that you owe half the money, so now, all of a sudden, you got to take your shvur. Aye, but Migo, you could have gotten off the hook completely from the Shvua by saying you owe nothing. So Gemara raises a reason why that's not true. What's the reason? Ha'aza. That's the situation. Gemara said essentially it's a Migo to Ha'aza. That maybe, listen, I did you a favor. I lent you money. You're willing to deny it a little bit. But to be such a machutzah, to say the guy who helped me didn't do anything, to completely deny this chesed, so you're not willing to be such a mechitzah. So instead of denying the whole loan, you deny half of it. So because of that concern, says the Gemara, we're not going to let you off the hook of the shul. In other words, because the migo that we would use to get you off the shul is a migo de ha'aza. So it sounds like from the Gemara, migo de ha'aza does not work to get you out of the shul. And yet, we have Rishon who maintain that Amigo Ta'aza does work for months. So it seems to be the opposite. When we look at the Shaila of Migo Be'mamon L'mamon, so we see Rishon saying it's no good for Mamon, but it would work to get you out of the Shua. And when it comes for Migo Ta'aza, we have Rishon saying it's a good Migo, but the Gemara tells us it doesn't get you out of the Shua. So it was the threshold for Shua higher or lower than Mammon when we talk about Migos. So that's an important question, which I think we'll have to
get to tomorrow as a kind of a cliffhanger resolution. But let's quickly review what we spoke about today. So we discussed a few points concerning the other answers of Rishonim on our question. Why is it that this person who gets a quarter of the talus can't just claim he gets the whole talus and therefore end up with half as Migo? So one answer we discussed last week was Migo Lahotzi, we don't say. And we talked a little bit about how that impacts. Is it because Migo is not strong, or is it because of the way Migo works? We mentioned Jonathan Teitelbaum's observation that the Gemara and Daf Kuf Yud undermines the Migo not by the alternative claim, but by the present claim that you're saying. And that's interesting. Maybe it just means the machlokis in the Gemara about whether Migo works there has to do with, do we look at the strength of the Migo claim, or do we look at your credibility, which is undermined by the current claim's weakness? And then we discuss the fact that Rishonim say, some Rishonim disagree and say, Migo can be Motzim and Amosak. So then we raise the question, so why is that true if we know, according to the Gemara, that Rove cannot be Motzim and Amosak? So why does some Rishonim maintain that Migo is effective to Motzim and Amosak? Is it a statement that Migo is better than Rove, which is so effective in other areas of Halacha? So we consider the different ways in which these two things operate. That Rove is powerful, but what does Rove do? It doesn't tell you something is definitely true by its very nature. It doesn't mean that because Mia exists. Rather, Rove is the license to act a certain way based on a majority. While Migo, perhaps, according to these Rishonim, Migo really is a genuine credibility. It means you are actually taken to be correct. And therefore, maybe Migo is more effective against the Muchzak than a Rove, which has no reason to upset a Muchzak, because a Rove, by its very nature, cannot mean that it's always true. And then we discussed the alternative answers. We mentioned that there were two alternative answers we were interested in today. The idea that Migo Mimamon Lo Mamon Lo Amrinan, or the idea that the alternative claim is too much of a Mechutzif approach, and Migo Da'aza is not going to be effective. And we talked about which Rishonim say Migo Mimamon Lo Mamon Lo Amrinan. So we saw that it's explicit in Muki Yosef and the Ran, and that it's very not explicit, but possibly there in Rashi in the very beginning on Daf Beis and Aleph. And we saw that it sieves a fascinating diuk, that he thinks that that's the view of Rashi, to answer Tosfos' not yet asked question, and that Rashi would not be able to use Tosfos' answer of Migo Lahotzi, because, first of all, Rashi wouldn't agree necessarily that Migo doesn't work Lahotzi, but also Rashi wouldn't agree that this is a situation of Lahotzi. We got into that whole discussion, that the Nesiv reads Rashi to say that Shnayim Ofsim is not really about Ofsim, but it's about equality between the two sides, and it would apply even if neither was Ofsim, like the view of the Ritzva, the Riva, and the Rivam, and all of those. And then we discussed Rabbeinu Yonah seems to also be in this list, the Gemara in Bava Basra about Rabbi Bar Sharshum, who wanted to be able to be believed that he has entitlement to eat from the perish of this land because he could be believed that he owned the whole land. And the Rabbeinu Yonah discusses the issue, among other issues, of Mamon L'Mamon Lo Amrinan, apparently also a part of this camp. And then we discussed a little bit why it should be if this is true. We mentioned that the halacha, it's not clear it is true. The Shaf and the Vilna Gaon, among others, seem to disagree. But we discussed various approaches. If you say Migo Mamon L'Mamon doesn't work, so why should that be? So we mentioned, first of all, you could say that it's a credibility issue, and that the Muki Yosef and the Ran both say that it's an issue of, essentially, it's the same thing as Migo Da'aza, that we don't assume that this alternative is so available. Maybe it takes a greater degree of chutzpah to bring in a claim from somewhere else, so essentially equating these two approaches. Then we mentioned the approach of the Kovet Shiurim, who focused on the Koach HaTaina idea, and said that you have the Koach of all the Tainas that are available to you within this case, but not a case that's going to come from somewhere else. And then we mentioned Rav Shimon Shkap, who is going to connect this to the Migo Lahotzi issues by saying that what does a Migo do? Not necessarily about power, but about process. That Migo is machzik. Migo gives you a chazaka status on something that you are dealing with. So it has to be the item that you're dealing with. It's not going to help if you get a chazaka from somewhere else. And then we mentioned the Aruch HaShulchan, which seems to a little bit mix and match, that the Aruch HaShulchan goes through all the answers and says, Migo Mimamon L'Mamon, he says elsewhere that we do use Migo Mimamon L'Mamon, but in this case, maybe not, because you have to be muchzak in both mamonos,
and that even those who would say Migul Lahotzi works would agree with that, and that's his way of addressing this issue. And then we started to discuss the question of the Gemara in Bava Basra. Is it really comparable to the case in our Mishnah? Maybe that's a far greater differentiation between the two claims than the half talus versus the whole talus. And that is a question that many raised and seems to be a valid point. But we said something based on the Birkas Avraham, whether he says this or not, but that it's interesting. In our case, if Migo was premised on getting Ne'amanis from a stronger claim, so in this case, the stronger claim, there's no Ne'amanis. You're not being believed in what you claim. You're getting half of what you're asking for as a resolution. So there's no Ne'amanis to draw from. It's essentially the bottom line, but it's not because of any credibility, so we can't transfer that credibility to this case. And then we noted that the Rishonim who say Migu Lamam Lamrinan, they have to deal with the fact that the Gemara does seem to be willing to invoke that in the context of a Shvua and Daf Ches, and they say, yeah, well, Migu Lamam is good enough to get rid of a Shvua. It's just not good enough to be effective in a monetary case, but it does what it has to get rid of a Shvua. It seems to suggest that the threshold for a Shvua is lower, and that's surprising to us because Migo d'ha'aza, the next topic that kind of segue into, in that context, the Gemara says b'feirish that a Migo d'ha'aza does not work to get you out of the shul. So in that case, it's a higher threshold, because some Rishonim will use Migo d'ha'aza for monetary purposes. And in the case of Mamon l'Mamon, we're saying, well, shul is a lower threshold, it'll work for that, just not for Mamon. So how do we resolve that? Stay tuned. That, God willing, we will have to pick up tomorrow. And again, tomorrow we will try to also address the loose ends from the other answers and really close up our Migo discussion and then segue right back into Chazara from the beginning and get us into the midterm tikkun. All right, everyone should have a wonderful day. Stay safe.